Welcome to In the Hive. I'm Roger McDonough. Today on the program, we're trying to get a handle on the windstorm that swept through northern Utah beginning in the early hours of Tuesday morning, and that just kept on sweeping through, wreaking havoc as it went. I don't know about you, but as someone who was born and raised here, I was left wondering, what was that? Why did it happen? I've never experienced anything like it before here. Though, yeah, I was here for and watched the 1999 tornado. This was different, and probably more damaging. It was also probably more damaging than March's 5.7 magnitude earthquake. We'll get to that in just a little bit. But first, the anatomy of a storm. Yesterday, I spoke with Christine Cruz, a meteorologist with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's National Weather Service, to engage in that mythologically fraught task of trying to get a handle on the wind. So the reason I want to talk to you is because of, obviously, this bizarre event that we had. And over the past few days, we've heard the words downslope wind event quite a lot. And I'm wondering if you can just sort of describe to us what we went through on Tuesday and into Wednesday, or I guess late Monday into Tuesday and beyond, what it was.
The downslope windstorm is a meteorological phenomenon we're describing where we have strong winds going down the side of a slope, and they happen all over the world. But this one in particular was quite strong. And what happened this time was a very, very cold air mass moved across the central plains of the United States. And with that very, very cold air, there were strong winds about ridgetop or so in the atmosphere. So, you know, at the top of the Wasatch Mountains. And that combined with a rapidly strengthening low pressure system over Utah. And so what happens is you get that very, very strong, cold, dense flow moving across the Wasatch from east to west. And as it reaches the Wasatch Mountains, it accelerates down those slopes. It's sort of like a waterfall of dense air. And normally that really strong wind hits Centerville, Farmington, those locations really strong, and then not as strong in other locations. But this one was a little more widespread. We had strong winds in northern Salt Lake County all the way through western Salt Lake County as well.
How rare are these events, or maybe not just the weather phenomena itself, but the event as severe as this one seems to have been based on where it hit and what it did?
So I looked back and I looked at some of the research out of the University of Utah's meteorology department. And the intensity of this event was right up there with the wind from 2011, where we had 102 mile an hour wind gusts in Centerville. We had a 99 mile an hour wind gust reported with this one. As far as how often do we have this particular type of event with varying severity, it seems to be about once every, there's 1.5 is the average per year. So 1 to 2 per year, but most of those are wind gusts 50, 60 miles an hour, not 99 or 102.
You mentioned the system coming across the plains. Wasn't there also an Arctic system that was somehow that played into this coming from the north? Is that true?
Yes. So what I was describing coming down the central plains was an Arctic air mass that was moving down with that storm. So places in Montana behind that cold front went down into the 20s. It was just extremely cold there for this time of year.
So I was born and raised here. I saw the tornado back in 1999. I've truly never seen anything, you know, personally in Salt Lake City like this kind of event here before, or the kind of damage that it seems to have caused. I'm wondering if there's anything to be said about the role of the modified, you know, of the changing climate in the fact that this happened where it happened or the intensity with which it happened. We've heard a lot about Arctic warming, for example, and here we are talking about an Arctic mass. I mean, is there any way to ascribe some portion of this having happened because of climate change or no?
So it's very hard to tie specific weather events to climate change. Climate change is more looking at longer duration periods, such as the max temperature in Salt Lake over the last 20 years has warmed. We can more directly attribute that to climate change. What different about this event and the severity is somewhat tied to is that this was in September. The trees all had their leaves. Normally these are winter phenomena. There's no leaves on the trees. Everything is in full summer leaf leafage right now. And we suspect that some of the increased damage from this event is partly due to the fact that the trees are still, it's still summer to the trees. So they're still fully leafed out, and leaves catching in the wind would increase the damage.
Right, behaving more like a kind of sail than they would if they didn't have any, if they were bare trees.
Right, that's how I picture it. I'm not an arborist, but from a meteorology perspective, that's how I picture it.
I've got the city forester here who I'll have a conversation with him about that. But so one of the things that when we talk about the conversation about climate change, we hear about global weirding. We hear about the idea that there's more energy in the system in general because of, well, of increased capture because of the greenhouse effect. But we can't necessarily say that the severity or the intensity of the storm was the result of that. We just don't know.
Right. There's not we can't make a direct correlation between those two.
How were you able to predict the fact that it was coming? Maybe you can talk about that. Like you told us in advance, hey, beware, this is coming. How did you do that?
So there's a couple ways that meteorologists can forecast phenomena like this. We have conceptual models in our head that we've developed over the course of our career. So I've been a professional meteorologist for over 15 years. So I know what wind patterns to start to look for, or what atmospheric patterns for a downslope windstorm. And then our models show us what they expect the winds to be. And once we get closer to an event, we can start to look at what we call high resolution models, which are down to 1 to 5 kilometers. So they see the terrain and they can try to model this phenomena, because this is a very small scale phenomena when you look at it. And we can look at those and see what they're forecasting for the max wind speeds. And what we saw on Sunday was the potential for 75 miles an hour or greater of wind. And then when we looked on Monday, the models were even more intense. Everything was coming together perfectly for an extremely intense downslope windstorm. And so between the range of experience and conceptual models of how these things work, and then seeing that in the models, is how we can come up with a forecast to say, look out, get ready, we're going to be seeing winds over 85 miles an hour.
Do you, as a meteorologist and as somebody who's in this field, is there something kind of, I mean, obviously you don't want the damage, but is it kind of exciting or interesting, or is this something you might even look forward to were it not for the damaging effects, because you are interested in the weather, in the phenomena that is, you know, of you study weather. Sometimes the weather is sort of dramatic. Other times it's not. Was this something that was, I guess, exciting from a professional standpoint for you?
So while we are very sad to see all the damage and everything that happened, we are all what we call weather nerds. We all grew up watching the weather. I'm a meteorologist because Hurricane Gloria's eyewall crossed my house in the 80s, and I was just fascinated by the wind. So most meteorologists don't go into meteorology to look at high pressure and high, you know, warm, sunny temperatures. So from a purely scientific point of view, most of us were just marveling at how strong it was, looking at the cloud features, things of that sort, from a purely science perspective. Yeah, we were pretty excited.
I don't know. Is there anything else you can say? I guess a question that lingers in my mind is, should we be expecting more of this either soon or at some point in the future? You know, you said every 1.5 years or whatever, but I guess how likely is this to happen again in the near term and then just in general in the future?
So we like I said, we get 1.5 on average events like this, not necessarily the severity or anywhere close, but just these downslope events every year. And so this is something that generally you'll see every winter. It just won't be gusts to 65, 85 miles an hour. So something to watch is just to make sure that you pay attention to the weather in the winter generally when we see these, but pay attention to the weather. And if you're seeing messages that say, you know, secure your trampolines, get ready now, that's when you should be doing that. Just to make sure that if you do see these strong winds, that you don't increase the damage by having things that you left outside blowing around. So, I mean, just monitoring the weather forecast is a good practice anyway.
Cool. I have one more question for you, which is somewhere out there at some point, somebody started putting out the idea that there was a 112 mile per hour wind gust at the University of Utah. I haven't been able to find the exact source of that measurement. Is that something that actually happened? Do you know?
We haven't. We've tried to find where that came from, and we haven't been able to find that observation. The highest we saw at the University of Utah was at their meteorology department, and it was 89 miles an hour. We have not been able to substantiate that 112. We did receive a report of 99 miles an hour in Centerville, but that 112, we haven't been able to track it down either.
Okay, great. Thanks for doing a little bit of fact-checking with me on that front. In terms of major and severe weather events in northern Utah, is there something else that we should be looking out for aside from something like this? Like what to you is a concern for the residents of northern Utah or that people ought to be aware of that is maybe more common? Is there something that we ought to be more aware of that isn't this downslope wind event?
So probably in my experience, the most frequent impact from the weather in northern Utah is from what we call microbursts. That's in the summer generally, but it is when we have enough moisture for thunderstorms, but the rain's not reaching the surface, and you can have what we call Virgo. You look up at the clouds and you see the little tendrils of the cloud coming down, and that can collapse and cause really strong winds. And so Utahns love the outdoors. If you're in a boat or if you're in a place where you're exposed, lightning, strong winds from those thunderstorms could cause you a lot of issues. So making sure you pay attention if thunderstorms are anywhere near you, for lightning if you're hiking, if you're on a boat, for wind gusts, things of that sort are much more common to impact you as an everyday Utahn than a downslope windstorm.
Again, that was Christine Cruz with the National Weather Service talking about how this week's wild windstorm developed. Now we'll turn to the damage that it caused. Yesterday, I dropped by Liberty Park, where Salt Lake City Mayor Aaron Mendenhall was giving an update on the city's response to the storm. What is the plan? Like, what are we going to do now that we've seen this devastating event happen? How are we going to clean it up?
Yeah. First, we're addressing the most emergency issues. Obviously, 911 has been cranking, and my hat's off to our dispatch. They've done an incredible job. They had more calls yesterday than on Earthquake Day this year. But obviously, our crews are hard at work and have some assistance from other cities in removing trees from the street. There's still a lot of impassable areas. Public trees that have fallen onto houses or onto vehicles, that's job number one at this point. So it's really important for us to get out to the public. Please don't haul your private trees out to the street right now. Not yet. We'll get there, but we're not there yet. We have to get rid of these very tertiary, the emergency issues first.
Yeah. When it does come time for residents to haul out their trees, what's the sort of process for the way in which the city will, you know, I mean, we used to have neighborhood cleanups. Now it's like everywhere needs a neighborhood cleanup. How will that happen?
Well, by the end of today, we'll have a phone number for volunteer efforts that people can call and hopefully be able to be strategically dispatched to areas that need it first and help each other clean this thing up. Salt Lake City, over the course of 2020, has faced so many challenges. And every time, I think you've seen the character of community that we have here. People want to help each other. We want to rebuild. And heaven knows we want to plant trees in this city. We're well on our way to planting 1,000 trees on the west side, in addition to the 1,000 trees we plant throughout the city. And I'm afraid that the results of this storm will basically zero us out.
Yeah,
but
sure.
we will replant. We'll keep planting trees. And I know our community wants that.
How about monetary damage? I mean, I looked at the earthquake, you know, what the estimates for the earthquake damage in total were, and I don't have that on in front of me, but for the city, I know there's more to talk about than just the city, but you know, you're the leader of Salt Lake City. How expensive is this going to end up being?
Millions of dollars. Millions. It's hundreds of thousands for us to do the trees work that we already are doing in the city. And here we are under extraordinary circumstances, what is really like the path of a tornado, but it covered our entire city. So the extent of the monetary damage, we won't know for weeks to come, but I would guess it's in the millions. We're operating as though this will be FEMA eligible. We don't know yet if those federal dollars will become available to us, but it's important to us that we operate in a way that would fit with that reimbursement, and we're doing that now.
What is the qualifying, how does it get defined as FEMA eligible?
We have an emergency operations team, Eric Witt, Pam Lofgreen, whose whole job it is to make sure that we're operating in a way that is reimbursable for whatever funding could become available. Mm-hmm. It's a good question for them.
For them. Okay, great.
It's a legal question.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm assuming that there was FEMA funding available for the earthquake, for example, or for the 1999 tornado. This is far more devastating. You would hope that there would be some federal assistance.
We hope so. This is far more devastating in terms of infrastructure damage than the earthquake was. And obviously, we've been working through the federal channels on earthquake assistance, so we do hope that the feds will be able to help us here.
Anything that sticks out to you about the kinds of impacts we're seeing? I mean, like, anything from this event will always stick with you, Mehrmann et al.
The fragility of life. It's been a miracle that Salt Lake City residents weren't injured by this storm. And what I hear from neighbors and residents across the city is how grateful they are that their families are safe and that their neighbors are okay. Houses will need repair. Sidewalks, streets, vehicles, they can be repaired. And they know that I think the resources are going to come to their aid from the city to do everything we can to make this easier. But it's been a miracle, and I'm grateful for it that our people are okay.
Well, City Mayor Aaron Mendenhall, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Roger.
Also there at Liberty Park was Salt Lake City's urban forester, Tony Gliott. And I asked him about the extent of damage this windstorm had on our urban forest.
This damage isn't just in city property trees, of which there are a significant amount, but it's a lot of private property damage. There are countless trees from private property that are on houses and neighboring property houses, cars, and so the cleanup effort is going to take some time, and it's going to be a heck of a lot of work. So.
Do you have a sense of, like, oldest trees gone? I mean, there's all of these interesting little sort of details, but I mean, also, maybe I should ask you, have you ever seen anything like this before, Tony?
No, I haven't. I mean, you know, we've seen our tornadoes back when I was in Chicagoland area come through, and in a way, this is a tornado that just cut a much wider swath through the city, kind of like a rainless hurricane, if you will. But
yeah.
But you know, oldest trees, you know, it's really hard to say. I think some of the oldest trees that we lost are definitely up at the cemetery.
Oh, yeah.
And then some of these pine trees in Liberty Park and some of the cottonwoods are also well up there in age, you know. Yeah. But it's hard to know exactly.
You could obviously later after you could do tree ring tests.
We could.
Yeah.
Yeah, we could, and I think we might do that on some of these. The thing that we're up against right now is the cleanup effort doesn't allow us a lot of time to look into, you know, precisely what we have lost here and which trees are the most notable ones. I mean, to me, they're all notable because they all add to the city's beauty and health.
Yeah, I mean, there's conversations to be had in the future about replacing them and whatnot, but the age of the trees, the fact that, I mean, some people found it kind of counterintuitive that the older trees were the ones that that came down, but to you, I'm sure that that's not surprising.
No, it's not. I think especially in park strips, you know, along our roadways or in our parks, I mean, what we have, I mean, the oldest trees have the largest canopy. And in a wind event, that canopy works against the tree. So not only have we seen a heck of a lot of root plate failure, which is a result of not having enough rooting area in some instances, and it's also a product of the way we water trees. All of the water that, you know, for these trees is available close to the surface. So the tree roots don't spend a lot of time going too deep or very deep. But we also had trees who their canopies caused their actual trunks, the wood of the tree, to fail rather than the root zone. So where the root zone ended up being more powerful and stable than the wood of the tree. So an event like this is in a word, extraordinary, and though not unique, I mean, they do happen. And you know, it's much like forest fires. Wind events are part of the life of a forest, and when we see this and when we witness it, it's you know, it's hard to put words behind it, but it is a natural process, unfortunately.
So I'll just one more thing is the tornado was this big thing. You weren't here for it, I don't think, 99. And but it was, I mean, it was nothing like the amount of damage that we're seeing here. It's just, yeah.
Right, like yeah. That's what I'm told. I mean, you know, people mentioned a big wind event in 11, which also preceded my time here. But to a person, they all say that this, they haven't seen anything quite this destructive in the city. So.
Wow. Tony Glyott, thank you so much for taking the time to speak.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks, Roger.
Again, that's Tony Glyott, director of Salt Lake City's Division of Urban Forestry, speaking right in front of a fallen stand of old cottonwood trees in the middle of Liberty Park yesterday. As we wrap up the show, before I forget, a couple of notes. Residents who are unable to clear large, heavy debris from their property on their own can, beginning today, call 211 to get connected with volunteers who can help. As of right now, Thursday morning, Salt Lake City is asking people to be patient and to hold off bringing all of their debris to the curb. Crews from the city and county are working to clear streets, sidewalks, and bike lanes first. Then they'll clear all downed city-owned trees before moving on to hauling away private downed trees and debris that homeowners move to the curb. In a press release last night, the city said that bulk green waste collection times and schedules will be announced in the coming days, so stay tuned for that. Also yesterday, states of emergency were declared at the county and state levels to help expedite the use of state and federal assistance, and that might help with access to FEMA funds that Salt Lake City Mayor Aaron Mendenhall mentioned earlier. So how was your experience with this storm? How bad was it for you, for your family, your property, your neighborhood? Weigh in at this week's In the Hive show post on KCPW's Facebook page. And know that you're not alone. 2020's been rough, right? That does it for In the Hive from KCPW, an entirely independent local public radio resource. Find a podcast feed of the show at kcpw.org or however you get your podcasts. Our theme music is by Andrew Shaw. I'm Roger McDonough. Thanks for listening. Both Sides of the Aisle is coming up just ahead. Please join us again next week.